Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased this afternoon to be joined by Rochelle, who has agreed to be with us to talk about a wonderful new children's book that she wrote called The Puppy's Soul. Welcome, Rochelle.
Thank you, Jen. Hello to all of y'all and to the hardworking monks out there at the monastery.
Oh, thank you. And you speak from experience since you've spent some time here working right alongside with us.
Yes, yes.
So first, I just have to say how incredibly beautiful the book is, just from every detail of it. Clearly so much care and attention and love went into it. So it's just a joy, a pleasure to read it.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
And we'll be sure before we end to give people details on how they can find it too. But I thought maybe you could start us off by just telling us a little bit about the book and kind of how it came to be and your inspiration for it and that sort of thing.
Well, I have a beagle, chocolate beagle puppy, and my niece, at the time that I was inspired about the book, was about 7 years old, 6 or 7 years old, and I live about an hour away from her, and I go up to church, and after church and after we've had dinner, usually me and my niece take the puppy out for a walk, and what I usually do is ask her, what did the preacher preach about at church, encouraging her to pay attention to the message each Sunday as she gets older. And she is very close to the puppy. The puppy is a family member, and she was taking her classes prior to baptismal. And so she had a lot of questions about why couldn't the puppy go to church, and what about the puppy's soul, and these very serious questions for her. I mean, I said, well, you know, the puppy can't go to church, and her question was, why?
Right.
So for her, as a member of the family, we were mistreating the puppy by not involving her our spiritual religious practices, and so it I had to think about it because she had crocodile tears. I mean, she was like, why can't we baptize the puppy, and why can't we take the puppy to church, and what about her soul? I don't want her, you know, her soul not to be saved. And so I really had to have a conversation with her about kind of what we believe and other practices and what the puppy could participate in as far as the religious practice and things. And so it actually ended up being conversation over several different Sundays about what the puppy could do. But it was an inspiration for the book. Pets in general are family members. Children consider them members of the family. And a lot of times pets expose children to life and death and communication and responsibility and those types of things. And so I'm sure this question comes up not only for me, but also for other adults with children around and pets around. It's, what about my pet and what about the pet's soul? And so that's what inspired me to write the book.
Hmm. Boy, and I don't want to give it away, but I know that everyone listening will just, it's just so beautifully laid out in exactly the way you're talking about, that it begins with this inquiry of this little person who so clearly is plugged into the present moment. Because, of course, to her, why would there be any difference between the puppy and me? If I go to church and, you know, that's saving my soul, then why would we not do that for the puppy as well? Okay. And just the conversation that unfolds through the story of the book is so beautiful, and the places that you and the niece and the puppy go together in the journey is just, it's such a heart-opening experience.
Well, and Cotevay, the artist, you know, the illustrations really make the book.
She did a wonderful
job.
Yeah, she really did.
Seven boys. I mean, no, I'm sorry, she has five boys.
She's
a busy mom, and just the quality and the color and the artwork, even the original, it's acrylic on canvas, the colors just pop. And so I was very fortunate to get in contact with somebody who really knows what children like to see and could help carry the message. The illustrations, I think, really make the book.
Yes, they're beautiful. They're really beautiful. I actually think the message stands alone, but I think the illustrations are, you're right, they just bring it to life. They really do.
Well, the other thing about the book is that I think it's very important to have conversations with children about anything, just the face-to-face adult time, having a conversation, letting them ask their questions and answering them as someone else who's on the path but at a different place.
Yes.
Is really important. And discuss what we believe in.
Yes.
And that type of thing is really important. And so I like walking the puppy because it gives me a reason to get her unplugged from the TV, the videos, the electronics, and get outside and be present with each other and the puppy. And so the puppy has really helped me kind of facilitate that communication. And so I've used the puppy with a lot of different things as far as teaching her various things. But it has been a wonderful experience.
Well, you know what to me is so beautifully modeled in throughout the story is that place of, so a young person has a question, and so often adults just give the answer, right? Here's the answer. But what happens, it feels like, in the story is there's a dialogue that happens, and there isn't one answer. You know, there's an openness, it feels like, on the part of the adult depicted in the story of, let's look at this together.
Yes.
And I think that's such an amazing model of being with young people, but also being with ourselves.
Yes.
In that playful spirit of inquiry of just, well, that is a great question. Let's take a look and see what we see about that.
Yeah, yeah. Me and my niece have such a good relationship, and we do have a lot of dialogues, and we're friends as well as an adult person and a child. And so, and I also wanted to somehow get that in the story of our conversations, that time that we have together. And the discussions that we have.
Yeah, yeah, it really comes through. You know, I remember talking to you, I think at least once in the process of the book, perhaps more times, just about the process of writing it and creating it and that kind of thing. And I wonder if you might say a little bit about how you feel like your practice carried you through in that process.
Well, I participated in the 2012 Deepening Practice plan in the Sangha.
Uh-huh.
And really majorly rearranged a lot of my professional life and life to be more balanced. And and so I had time, and I spent time at the monastery. I had more time with family and friends, and I also did some things for my body, personal health types of things that needed to happen. But I had always wanted to write a book, and my niece and I had so many interesting conversations after church, and what I decided to do is to write the book, but not with the goal of having a published book or a goal of getting something out of it, just sharing an experience and enjoying the process rather than being so attached and so gung-ho about the goal. And so the process of writing the book and really choosing the words right, finding the illustrator, the process of publishing, not being rushed on some type of timeline that conditioning put up, but really taking my time to enjoy the process of this has been so enjoyable. It's a product of practice. The process has been deepening practice another level for me. And so this is a product of that year, which is not just that year anymore. That is more my life and how my life is arranged and how I look at things and think of things now. So,
well, I will tell you, it's clear when you pick that book up and read it that it was done from the present moment. It's very,
well,
very
obvious. You.
So how is everyone on the phone going to get one of these?
Okay. Well, it is available on Sangha Market.
Okay.
And so you can log into Sangha Market, and it's actually in two places. It's under books, and it's also under children's things.
Okay.
And so you can send an email that you're interested in purchasing the book, and I'll send you an email back about how to pay. For every book that's sold, $3 goes to Living Compassion. This is helping support the Sangha. Also on the advertisement on the book page, there are photos of the illustrations, so you get an idea of the illustrations for the book. When you get one from, when you buy one from the Sangha, I actually sign it, so you actually get a signed copy. It is also available on Amazon. However, those aren't signed, and those don't go directly to benefit the Sangha.
Right. And I'll tell you, let's see, choosing between buying it on Sangha Market or Amazon, yeah, I'm pretty clear.
Well,
Sangha Market.
Some of that's the publishing and what avenues they put that on.
Right, exactly.
But
I'm glad you gave
it. Sangha Market, and so I signed them, and
oh, that's lovely.
And the puppy actually has a signature stamp. Look how, yeah.
Well, Rochelle, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon, and thank you for writing the book. It's truly, it's just a gift. I'm excited to share it with some young people in my life.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks, Rochelle. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Rochelle. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Good. I can tell you that I have not gone to Sangha Market yet.
Oh,
I'm restraining myself.
Restraint? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't have to go to Sangha Market because Rochelle sent me a copy of
wow.
the book.
Wow.
And when I opened it up, I confess, I got to maybe page 2, and I was kind of jumping up and down screaming.
Wow.
And I, in fact, then just took it immediately down, I live steps away from the monastery. Took it down to the monastery, interrupted everyone so that they could read the book right then and there.
Wow.
And it's just, I'm in love with it. And I'm right there with Jen. My way of talking about it is, if you have children or you were ever a child,
right.
This is a must read book. And of course, if we build it up too much, people are going to think, it's so don't do that. It's just fabulous. That's all.
Yeah.
And they're right. The story is great, and the art is just amazing. So it's just going to be a great gift for everybody for themselves. And then if you do have children in your life, which I know some of us on this very conversation do, then for them it's just priceless.
Yes. I just love how practice manifests in our lives. It's just so beautiful and creative and unexpected, and
yes,
it's amazing.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And that, and the thing that Rochelle was saying about, always wanting to write a book. And we have these kind of things that go through, but we're doing other things in our lives, and someday I'd like to do that, and then life just kind of angles it around where there's the perfect thing for us to do, and it comes from such a different place than when ego gets a hold of it and decides ego wants to do something for whatever reason and starts pushing, and that's of course when we get really unhappy and unsuccessful. But when we just let life fulfill our wishes and dreams, then, magical, beautiful things happen for us.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. Yes. And I have some announcements here.
All right.
The There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat will be offered at the monastery. Now, 2 upcoming dates, April 13th through 20th, and a new date, May 4th through 11th.
Aha.
Yes. Must be very popular.
I think it is very popular,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. And as we like to point out, it's popular for people who are new to our practice, and people can have had a practice for a very, very long time. And if they're new to our practice, it's a marvelous retreat. And then for people to repeat, because, you know, for so often, we just kind of need that booster shot.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. It's 8 days. It's beautiful. It's at the monastery, and it's about having compassion for yourself and for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are lots of other springtime retreats at the monastery, great ways to deepen your practice. It's a beautiful time of year to enjoy the monastery grounds.
Oh, it is so beautiful. It's heartbreaking. Yes.
Wow. And those retreats include Rest and Be Thankful, the Your Practice Retreat, and the brand new Be the Person You Want to Find.
Mm. Mm.
So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to see the new schedule or to sign up for any of these retreats.
Does the resistance, Transcending Resistance Retreat come after that, or is it just that it's already full?
That's
you
a
know?
Great question. I knew the monastery one is full, and there was some
space
in the North Carolina one. That's the information I had as of last week.
Okay. All right. Great. Good. You don't want to tell people about retreats that are already full. That's just unfair.
Yes. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get going. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm great. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, it's been a while.
It has, and just listening to Michael talk about all those retreats makes me miss being there, and it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I have somebody else who got to go this time. So, which is, I'm just calling to report on my my at-home month-long meditation, workshop.
Yes.
So anyway, my husband's there right now, as you know, and so I'm having a month with the kids and working, trying to juggle the job and the kids and all the other extra stuff, so...
Mm-hmm. And, before we hear any more about that, I just want to say that I think that is great modeling for parents everywhere. You know, we get into this idea that as soon as we have kids, our lives need to go on hold, and and which is an idea that karmic conditioning, of course, is very, very supportive of. But to have, to support a partner in continuing practice at that level and to model that for our children so that they grow up knowing that taking care of ourselves is as important as taking care of them, because then that's the kind of parent they'll become.
I sure hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Well, at least we increase our chances.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it's going pretty good. And I was just, when I was kind of getting prepared to do the month, I had a guidance call with Monk, and one of the suggestions was, use a I can't remember what she called it, but it was to all the stickies that you write on to say, okay, got to do this, because I can't remember them all. To then make a stickies wall of done stuff, the success wall of okay, all these things. See all this? I've done it.
Yeah,
I accomplished
this. You write in big red letters, done.
Done.
Each one of them. So I like this.
I'm doing that in my classroom, which is where I use stickies the most. It's all the time. So I've got this. I've got this wall, and so far the kids haven't asked about it. It's kind of interesting. They're just like accepting that there's supposed to be stickies all over the wall that have nothing to do with them. So I'm waiting for them to ask what it's all about. Yeah.
Do you
really
have a projection on that? Do you have a projection? Are we just raising a bunch of children who have no curiosity and are intimidated about asking?
I don't know. No, these children are not intimidated about asking. When they notice it, they'll ask. Because they ask about everything else. So maybe they just haven't realized that it's not normal.
Yeah.
That it's something that, you know, that they might want to ask about. So it's helping me to see that I'm accomplishing something, that I'm not just spinning my wheels, because it feels at other times that you know, I really could work for 24 hours a day and not get it all done.
Oh, absolutely. Let's just stop and underline that. That is absolutely the case. Absolutely. Because the one making that to-do list doesn't do anything except make the to-do list. You with me on that one?
Yeah, there's someone who feels like this needs to be done, and then someone else shows up, or many someones show up to do the job. Is that what you're...
Right, and that person is their only job, and we don't know if it's a real person in a body or perhaps a voice in the head who just makes things on the list. And there's never until the kind of process that you're doing, there's never anything other going on except putting more things on the list.
We got to
the end of the list. Let's have a big party, or gosh, I'm going to take the next month off because, boy, that was a long to-do list. Like, it's just, you know, exactly, you'll die in the traces with an unfinished to-do list clutched in your hand.
Yeah, and my tendency has always been to focus on the things at the end of the day that didn't get done.
Oh,
you know, there's
those
two or three or four, whatever they are, things. And then all the other 10 things that got marked off, they're marked off so they don't count.
That's right.
So that's been my tendency. Yeah. So this is helping me to see all the things,
There's another parallel here. So, the voices will get people focused on failure or mistakes, right? So there's a lifetime of successes and things that went really well. But people never get to hear about that. It's just they're tortured by a mistake. It could be a mistake that happened when you were 16. It could be a failure when you were 20. And those are all in quotes, right? Because of course we don't believe in any of those kinds of things. But that's all a person's attention is just consumed by endless stories about those events, rather than, as you're saying, you know, you put the if we kept a list of all of the things that we did successfully and all of the good things that happened from ideas that we had. I mean, there aren't enough stickies.
Yeah, I need to invest in stickies.
Yes. Hey, now that would be a good fondest company. If somebody wanted to, right? You could do spiritual stickies. This is a good stronger market project, right? So they could have, you know, you could have them with your favorite thing, whatever you're working on. On them, and then you put them up in the way that this could be good.
This is a good idea.
I love stickies. I love them. I have almost an unhealthy relationship with them. And if they were something other than, what Post-it Company puts out, I'd be a customer. All right. Very good.
So another thing that I've noticed just really along those same lines is that the expectations I have for myself when it's normal family and everyone in the family is here are much higher than they are this month. And maybe that's because I've gone into it intentionally and kind of lowering the standards.
Very
and saying,
good.
You know, don't really need to do that. Don't have to get that done. That's okay not to do that. So, but
very
I just,
good.
It's just what I've noticed is that I'm not as hard on myself.
Yes, and so
right
hopefully
now.
This is a habit that you're going to carry forth into the
good.
Rest of your life, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, again, you know, the standard stuff we always look at. When your life is over, you know, what are you going to treasure? You're not even going to treasure those stickies.
No.
Your accomplishments, right? You're going to treasure the time you spent with your family and the happy memories and the love that's there. And, you know, that's what fills our hearts up, not getting to the bottom of that to-do list one more time.
Not all that other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good reminders, huh?
Yep. And I'm just so glad that I got to get through and talk to folks and say hi.
All right.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much. And,
all right.
Maybe we'll see you here for your month before long.
Well, I'm not sure it'll be a month, but eventually it will be.
Right.
But not soon.
Good.
All right. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks.
Bye, Michael.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air. That was fun, Sherry.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Love those practice reminders.
Yes, yes.
And love lowering standards.
Oh, yep.
Because can you imagine if the heart made our to-do list?
Yeah.
You know, if somebody who loved us unconditionally made our to-do list or planned out our weekly or monthly schedule,
yeah.
what would it look like? Very different from the one most of us keep, I bet.
Yes. Yes, I always remember that caller who said that there was only one item on the to-do list, and that was to take care of, you know, his name, and everything else was on the could-do list.
Right. Would be nice if I get to it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. Because, you know, with that, of course, karmic conditioning just wants to leap up and say, oh, yeah, Sharon, and you sit on the couch, and you'll never get anything done, and you'll, you know, die with a shopping cart. And the reality is, taking care of me includes every good thing in my life.
Yes.
You know, I want to work.
Yes.
I want to be responsible. I want to take care of things. I want to participate. I want to do all of that. And all of that comes from my heart, and all of that takes care of me. What wouldn't make it onto the list, of course, is all the stress and pressure and anxiety and things that karmic conditioning likes to offer us.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Sherry. It's Sridevi.
Hi.
Hey, Sridevi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. What's going on?
So I'm calling because there's a situation that has come into my family, and as a result of kind of what's happened, it's very likely we will have to sell our family home, which we've had for 31 years, and so it's one of those situations that's happening fast and furious where a lot of decisions have to be made. And first, I just have to say I'm so grateful for having been part of this practice for the 5 years preceding this, because it is so amazing to go into something like this and just be like, oh, okay, I can support myself through this. I don't have to run away from it. I don't have to abandon those parts who are having all of the emotions. And that's just, I have so much gratitude to you and to Michael and the monks for all of the support you've not only given me but everyone, because I can't just tell you how amazing it's been as a result of that.
It's one of those good reminders that this is the kind of life situation that we practice for.
Yes.
That's why we do practice.
Yes.
Because we'll all hit these before we get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And so to practice diligently so that, as you say, we're ready to be in loving kindness with ourselves as we go through it. And I bet you're bringing a lot more of that to everybody else who's involved in the situation.
Yeah. It's been actually a really incredible moment with myself and my family. And, so I've been seeing what all the voices are doing, and it's been very interesting because they're actually not doing a lot. There's some subtle things going on, but I think, I saw all of the, this shouldn't happen and this is wrong, and immediately just, I'm not going there. I just dropped that, which I could see myself 5 years ago going, just living in that space of this is wrong and this shouldn't be happening. And I'm just not there. And so what is possible now is to just be with the parts that are sad. And, you know, and also to be with the parts that can support my parents in a much more effective way, because they're going through their own process. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's just, it's hard. It's hard. And
uh-huh.
I have these parts that show up and, you know, most of the time I'm pretty good and I'm able to be there and present. And then this part will show up who's just like, this can't be happening. This can't be happening. I got to figure something out. This can't be happening. And when you just, it's the sense of the loss, you know,
yeah.
and just,
yes.
and when you have no yeah. control, you go, I okay. there's no, I'm going to think of 20 different scenarios of how I can possibly stop it. But ultimately I'm going, okay, this is just what's going to happen. And how, and I think you said this on last week's show, which was so incredible, which is how can I not only be okay going through it, but how can I even go through it with a sense of well-being, which just actually so inspired me as I was going through
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's everything in our practice coming together in one situation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
To really get it that, no, there's nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This is
mm-hmm.
hard, and
mm-hmm.
and none of us would choose this. But it is what we've got, and so how are we going to be with it? And part of that is grieving the loss, and part of that is being there with whatever anybody happens to be experiencing at the time, because it's
mm-hmm.
like a death. And
yes.
in that situation, you know, we're all over the map with emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just there and we're breathing through it, and that's practice.
Yeah, yeah, and it's been interesting because I'll wake up some mornings and my eyes will open and it's almost like sledgehammer to the heart. Like,
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah, this is what's going on. And I just sit there and I lie and all I can think is breathe in, breathe out, breathe
mm-hmm.
in, breathe out. And then it's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, let's get up and move the body. Let's go work
mm-hmm.
out. Let's
mm-hmm.
drink water. Let's eat
mm-hmm.
something healthy. You know, let's meditate. You know, and it's interesting
mm-hmm.
even just saying it out loud because I'm saying let's, and I can just see obviously there's a mentor there who's kind
mm-hmm.
of guiding that person who's just kind of like, oh, you know, in that panic of what's
mm-hmm.
happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just been the biggest struggle at this time is just the, oh my gosh, this can't be happening, and just that inevitability is just
yeah.
really tough. Is really tough.
Yeah. Oh, because again, it's very like going to the doctor and getting a terminal diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the inevitability of it. You know, there are so few times in the lives of privileged people, and I always have to add that part
mm-hmm.
because much of the world, as you know, doesn't share our experience, where we have to face the absolute lack of control that we have
mm-hmm.
to really get it, that control is an illusion. And just because
mm-hmm.
we're lucky enough that almost everything we want works the way we want it to, that
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean we have control. And so to face that, I don't want this, and there is no choice about this. I think it might be the biggest lesson we have to learn. And the good part of it for us, for those of us who practice, is we realize that. You know, we're not in a place of actually believing this is wrong, this shouldn't
yeah.
be happening. We watch the reaction, but we know it's not true.
Yeah.
And people in these situations become angry and bitter and hostile, and their lives are ruined because they really believe that something happened that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And I have to say, you know, what's incredible, though I'm still in the process, is because through practice I'm able to be here and remind myself in every moment. And I've been listening to podcasts. I've been listening to audio CDs. I mean, I have you playing while I'm cleaning out rooms, like, you know, on my laptop, you know, just to have those reminders that I feel grateful that knowing that, you know, once, you know, the house sells and that part is done, that I'm not going to come out on the other side going, what just happened here? Like coming out of a daze. that I will have been there for every step of the process, that I won't have just been, you know, unconscious through it and not knowing what just happened to me or to my family.
And because you've been doing practice, there can also be that trust that actually good things are going to come out of this.
Yes, yes.
They will. They always do, and they always have. Even in the case of the kinds of losses that I was just talking about, there's always there are always blessings if we're willing to be there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
I
agree with you so much. And the one thing that is, you know, I also see that I'm just really conscious of and am able to realize is, you know, I see my mother and father going through their struggles, and I just see, you know, just wanting to transfer all of this love and tell them it's going to be okay, but they're going through their process. And, like, because I'm here seeing what's happening for me, I can be better able, like you said earlier, to support them and be open to and not deny them, like saying, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, and we just have to be happy all the time. And let's – no. It's just everyone can be where they need to be, because that's where they need to be, as long as we're conscious of where we are.
Yes, and, you know, there's another little element to that that I'm sure you're aware of, is that they don't have to deal with you.
Yes.
You know, so that's a variation on what my teacher used to call being a social relief. So, you know, if they're going through what they're going through, and then they've got a bunch of kids who are freaking out, this is not helpful.
Yes.
So there you are able to deal with yourself. It's even if you're not directly able to support them in any particular way, just the fact that you're taking responsibility for your own experience lets them off the hook in a huge way.
Yeah. And so I just, you know, I called to say thank you so much for just everything, because this moment came up and I just saw that there was one direction that I could go, and then there was the direction of practice. And let me tell you, there was no question there. It's like, I'm going in the practice direction. And and I feel sadness, but I feel moments of utter joy and happiness and laughter and fondness, and it's all there. And it's all happening, and I'm there with it. And it's really just due to all of the work that you and everyone else who's part of Sangha has done. So just thank you so much.
And most of all, Sri Devi, the work that you've done. We just don't ever want to overlook that, because all the work in the world could be done around. But if you're not doing it, It's not gonna mean a thing. So say thank you to the one who's persevered.
Yes, I will. Yeah. I will.
All right.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi. Wow, that was great. That was amazing.
Big. Life is big, isn't it?
Life is big.
And life is, you know, again, because fortunately, so many of us in practice are really fortunate. We can lose sight of, I think, what a struggle life is for so many people.
Yeah.
And really people very, very close to us, perhaps not close to us in the sense of that kind of intimate connection, but in our very neighborhoods, in our communities.
Yeah.
And then extend that to around the world, where people are just going through really, really hard, hard things all the time. And if we can be aware of it in the way that Sri Devi was talking about, I can't prove this, but I think we can be a contribution simply by being in the deepest place of compassion that we can be in. So at least we're not contributing to anybody's struggles.
Yeah, exactly like you were telling Sri Devi at the end there, that her parents don't have to worry about her at least.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's taking care of herself.
Yeah.
Whew. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor and then we'll be right back.
All right. Good. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Lisa from California.
Hello, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good.
And let me start my timer for 5 minutes. And
bless your heart.
I'm looking, you know, the reason I'm calling is I'm looking at a subpersonality. I'm wondering about a subpersonality. And it's one that I thought it was one that was kind of dominant after I got out of college. And it's kind of a tough subpersonality. And I've been sort of like, and it can get, I recall it being, it could get aggressive. She could get aggressive. So not encouraging her to come out. But recently I read something about a warrior archetype.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was right. I think it's a subpersonality that took me, you know, it took me to live in New York City after college in a really tough part of town and, like, for training for a war zone, kind of, like, literally. How I remember I got really tough from that experience. And then I moved back to California and kind of don't want that subpersonality. I've kind of not been wanting that subpersonality to come out, but I've been kind of channeling that since reading about the warrior archetype. And I think that subpersonality actually picked up the phone and called Open Air. And then I was
get a little support.
Well, you know, I think I just picked up, I was channeling that subpersonality at work today because I'm usually not tough, you know, but I was pushing back on some people, you know, channeling that subpersonality. And then it was time for Open Air, and I thought, I'm going to call. And then I was realizing as I was on hold, you know, waiting, that subpersonality probably picked up the phone and called.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You know, have you ever heard me talk about Cheryl?
Yeah, I see. I think, yeah, down by the river with the Uzi. That's why I thought that subpersonally has too much of that.
Uh-huh.
So I haven't wanted to bring her out. But I don't think... Okay.
Here's the deal. Cheryl's tough. She is a tough chick. There's no question about that. And she doesn't do well with guff from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way that you talk about, she could be aggressive in her pushback. You know, she's never aggressive in the sense of attacking, but aggressive in defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so that toughness can be a part of you without turning the behaviors over to someone who might not be the best candidate for making decisions about your behavior. So, a couple of things about that. One, my arrangement with Cheryl is that she goes off and plays by herself, which she likes to do because she doesn't like people. And if I don't do a good job of staying present and taking care of everyone, then she'll come back in and do what she needs to do. And that's our arrangement. And I don't get to say anything afterwards, no criticism, no anything. I wasn't there. She did her job, and that's it. Sometimes I'm left to clean up the bodies, but, you know, that's the price we pay for not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I can have all of that toughness in the sense of not being a pushover, not being a doormat, not being a, you know, there's the line and I'm on this side of it and you're on that side of it and you stay on your line on your side and I'll stay on mine and it's fine. But don't come walking over here and expect a good greeting. And I can have that kind of stiff spine without needing to act out.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what you're going for. You know,
yeah.
if the warrior is tough, then people tend not to want to try to take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you have to attack or be violent or aggressive or anything else. It's just you make a conscious choice about how you're going to be in a situation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, my timer went off, but I just wanted just to wrap up. So I haven't really brought that subpersonality out since I've been practicing, which has been maybe 3 years or so, and until today. But I don't feel there's that danger of attacking.
Oh, because you're conscious.
Yeah.
Because you're aware. And
yeah.
So now you're in a position from a centered place to make a decision about when you want somebody who's tough, whose energy is tough. No, I said no, and I mean no, and no is what I mean, and that's the end of that discussion. Versus when you want to be there and be agreeable and give and take and that sort of thing. You make the choice because within your the array that we call Lisa, there's something that is appropriate for every moment. And
mm-hmm.
once karmic conditioning is no longer making the choice about who's there and how we are and what we're doing, then life is free. It's like life is the painter and we're the palette. And all of the colors are there and they can all be used to create whatever beauty life is working on currently.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we're there either acting out unconsciously or even acting out in little quote marks in the sky, consciousness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by that last part? You know, I know I'm acting like a jerk and it's fine. I want to act like a jerk. You know, it seems like we're there and conscious, but we're not. We're just as identified as if we're having a knee-jerk reaction to whatever is arising in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard to, I guess I've been practicing enough that it feels hard to, I get. Well, anyways, I guess I've been using that subpersonality consciously today so far.
Yeah,
and
you know, go ahead.
And there may be a time where I'm unconscious. I guess I've just really not brought it out. It does come out. I guess.
Yes,
but,
you're not aware. You're not aware. You've tried not to let it out. You're probably not aware of when she has come out, And the other thing that I would offer just for you and for anybody else who's looking at this issue, Cheryl loves batting cages and, you know, doing all kinds of really physical kinds of things. Loves to run, loves to do hard stuff because you got to be tough to do hard stuff.
Yeah.
She likes that. And so that's a good use of her energy.
And, so I definitely want to look at this some more. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, because there is, I was just looking back at that time, which was for a four-year period, and really, and I'm not doing a lot of that stuff now, but a lot of it was really good, you know, like you said, the exercise and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, you know, I'm proud of that time of my, I'm really glad I did that. And,
yeah.
But I'm not channeling that, or I'm not like expressing that subpersonality.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So perhaps that's the point. She's here now to bring these things into your life that you've actually been missing, but didn't realize that you were missing.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well,
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
thanks,
very welcome.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. Well, that was fun, Sherry. I'm getting all excited myself here.
Who can we bring out? Who can we bring out?
Yeah.
You know, it's such an important point because most of us, until we've done a fair amount of work, really deeply, deeply believe that whatever is the dominant personality is who we are. And then that dominant personality gets put in charge of deciding what other personalities are allowed to be there and how much time they have. And often, especially after a period of time, nobody is allowed. So you've got a person who just basically does one thing all the time and believes that that's their authentic being because they're always that way. Yeah. So, I mean, there could be a range of behaviors that go with it, but it's one person deciding what I like, what I don't like, what I do, who I see, where I go, you know, the books I read, the whatever else it is. And that's just to, you know, bring a lot of awareness to the fact that that is not authentic nature. That is a dominant personality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to break for an important message, and then we'll be back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Janet!
Yay! I'm doing really well. I'm so glad that I got on. I haven't called in way too long.
I know. No.
And it was really hard to even get on the phone tonight.
What's going on? Don't tell
but
me.
But I did it.
Get resistance.
I was getting a lot of resistance. Yeah, all of a sudden I heard this voice saying, well, you can do it another time. And I'm like, what? No, wait, no.
I know what you are. So go ahead.
I was being lulled.
I want you to know, and everyone who is listening in to know, that our little team of book people here, put the very close to the finishing touches on the Resistance book on this very day.
Yay. That is awesome.
Yep. So those voices that sneak in and say, oh, you can do that later, they are going to be outed in a really big way.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. I must have known.
That's why I called.
You needed. That's right. You needed to bring up that topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have another topic.
Good.
So about a month ago, I was at Kripalu, and they had a fire drill, which was highly unusual. And during the fire drill, I fell. And I injured my knee pretty badly, tore a lot of different things. And so I loved your conversation with Sri Devi, because that was exactly it. It was I was out of control. There was no control over anything that was happening.
Yeah.
You know, and as I was falling, those were my very words were, I don't want this to be happening.
And so what's the prognosis?
Well, it's been interesting, because the prognosis is don't know, because I need to try to restore the knee right now before anything is determined. And so that's what I've been working on. And actually, that's been my project for Lit Up, is working on restoring my knee. So I have been, instead of, I can't believe I have to do this, this is such a drag, it's like, okay, this is so exciting, what else do I need to know? What else can I do?
What else can I learn about this that's going to help me take care of this part of the body?
Yeah.
Well, we're living parallel lives, Janet, because I am in week 7 of rehabbing my knee.
I'm in week 7.
Are you? Oh, we really
yes.
are on parallel tracks.
We are on parallel paths.
Wow. So I'm right there with you, sister. it is an amazing adventure, isn't it? When you approach it from the point of view of, okay, these two things actually have worked beautifully for a very long time, and I've paid precious little attention to them, and now this one is really malfunctioning. So a whole new relationship needs to be established here, one in which I now attend and am in service to, rather than ignoring and having this knee serve me for all these years.
I love it. I love that you're saying that, because that's been exactly my experience. And I was thinking that that was just going to be my little story calling in. But then when you were just talking and you were talking about exercising and running, it just like conditioning just ran through me. Oh, yeah, well, you're not running now. You can't do
that.
That's
right.
You know,
that's right.
So it's either looking at all the things I can't do or looking at what this is opening up for me. By way of new things.
Yes, exactly. First of all, how many things can a person do that doesn't involve a knee?
I know,
that's a whole adventure right there, right? Yeah, and I hope people who have carpal tunnel or whatever are applying it, you know, because it's the same exact process. So, there we are. Now, I'll tell you, because you can appreciate this, the magnitude of this. I actually did my first little jog yesterday, and didn't hurt myself. So, and I mean little jog, and that's the other thing that I'm enjoying about it is patience. You know,
patience. Just, oh my gosh.
Patience. Yeah.
Patience,
yeah.
like yes, okay, so I'll just tell you what I just did.
Okay.
Today, I sat in, I've been able to start sitting cross-legged, you know,
wow,
much better than I could, but even a little bit more, but I usually don't sit that way when I meditate. I sit with my, I don't know what you call it, with my feet back, my knees
uh-huh,
bent, and I
uh-huh,
turn the pillow sideways,
mm-hmm,
and today was the very first day I got into that position for maybe 3 minutes. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so it's just those, one day I got into child pose and with lots of props, and I started crying. I was like,
yeah,
oh, my God, this is exquisite, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
So, doing something that you've done for years and years, all your life, with not a thought at all, and now, at least in my experience, I mean, I don't take any joint on this body for granted. You know,
no,
every time that elbow moves, I am just so happy for it and with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so with you. And what I'm really seeing is that's the place. That's the only place that I want to be, because when I'm not there, then I'm in conditioning, thinking about
yeah,
what's coming up, what I'm going to lose out on, or any of those kinds
yeah,
of things. And I just have to reel myself back, not listen.
Yes, exactly so. Because we are people who focus on what is possible for us, not on what isn't.
I love that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yes.
Well, I am
yeah,
so glad you made it through.
I'm
we
so
got
glad
a chance
I
to
called you, and we're knee sisters.
Exactly.
Hey, which knee is it?
Right knee.
So is mine.
See there? I think it's letting go of inflexibility in the past, personally. I think that's the metaphysical story that goes with it. So I'm letting go of the past. And I'm regaining a new flexibility that's going to take me into the rest of my life.
Love it. Love it.
Good. All right.
I am
so much,
glad
Janet.
I called. Great to talk
me
to
too.
You. Bye, Michael.
And
thank
you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janet. Wow, it's a big show tonight, Sherry. A lot of willingness out there. I hear
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Renee in California.
Well, hello, Renee. How are you?
I'm great. The show makes you great.
Oh, good. You just can't help grinning.
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, yeah, you're just listening and getting happier every minute.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what's going on besides getting happier every minute.
Well, I had a big aha, and I wanted to share it.
Oh, good.
And it's about how conditioning torments me with fear.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I was noticing how it just tries everything, you know, whether it's changing careers, you know, something bad's going to happen, or if I'm flying to a place, or, you know, on a trip and the plane's going to crash, just pretty much constantly bringing up bad things that are going to happen or that I, you know, like just like
yeah,
that. And,
yeah.
And
yeah,
and I had some guidance, and the phrase that came out, the mantra that came out of it for me was, safety is an illusion.
Ooh.
And I don't know if that totally is right, like if that makes
sense. Oh, it's completely right. And I'll promise you this, everybody who ever died knows that. It's just that they can't report back to us. That's how we don't get the information.
Yeah, and it was just this, I'm walking around with no fear right now. And it's incredible, because I just keep going, safety's an illusion, so whatever. Like,
uh-huh.
You know, like I'd go on a walk and think about dogs attacking me or all this, and I just go on a walk now.
Uh-huh.
And enjoy it, you know?
Yes, because if something happens to you, first of all, it's probably not going to be what you were being told,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So there's no way to be prepared except to be present and to trust life with your life, which is the only choice we have anyway. And as you say, what that does then is free you up really to enjoy the life you have.
Right. And to enjoy the life and to access the intelligence that really will keep you safe.
Yes.
If you can be kept safe.
That's right. That's right.
Because the fear actually stops us from seeing what is available.
Right. Well, somebody could be worried about getting mugged and step out in front of a bus.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that,
but
well,
if we're here. What were you going to say?
I was going to say the fear doesn't have anything to do with being safe.
No, it has
in
to
the
do
way
with
that I'm
controlling us.
Right.
It has
yeah.
to do with controlling us. That's all that's yeah. happening. It has simply to do with us giving all of our attention to ego.
Yes. That's what it was mm-hmm. doing, was distracting me to try to get my attention
yes.
from enjoying the moment, from enjoying what I'm doing, which is taking a lot of risks and doing a lot of things I haven't done before. And
yes.
it was trying to shut that down.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, I don't know who said this, somebody somewhere, that, you know, very often somebody's leaving and we'll say, be careful, especially kids, you know, okay, well, now be careful. And this person suggested that we say, okay, well, have a great time. Take some risks.
Yeah.
And what a different orientation to life.
Yeah, yeah. That's
true.
What
does be
yeah.
careful mean, for God's sake, except turn your attention over to the voices in your head telling you everything that could possibly ever go wrong in the world.
Exactly.
And that is just not being careful.
And that's how I was taught as a child, was be careful, and then I was told all the bad things that could happen.
Yes, repeatedly. Yeah. You know, it's a great sadness to me. Now, I understand we live in a crazy world, and I suspect the world has always been just as crazy as it is now. It's just that we now have the ability to know all of the craziness all of the time. But for the last, I don't know how long, I see children becoming more and more frightened, you know, afraid of people, afraid of just timid, you know, just, you know, if you smile at a child on the street or say hello to them or whatever, the reaction is one of fear, you know, that they're in constant danger. And I just find that so sad.
There's even the term stranger danger.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think that you're yeah. right. It's all the constant media that we get from the internet.
Right.
And that they're
right. Yeah, and if we could get a statistic that says how many children are hurt or harmed by strangers
mm-hmm.
as compared to family members.
Yeah, really.
And how many children grow up without ever having any dangerous encounter with anybody, would
yeah.
we have a different view of that?
Hearing all the stories about everyone who made it home safe that day. Yeah. Or,
exactly.
Yeah.
yeah. Well,
yeah.
okay, nothing happened to me today. You know, I was fine. I was safe all day.
Yeah.
Not a good story.
Yeah. That's right. You can't, you know, it's just a small percentage of what happens, and those things can happen, and
sure.
being fearful is not going to stop it.
Right, living your life in fear is not going to stop it.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
going to stop it.
Yeah. yeah.
Being intelligent, as you say, will help you be, it will help you increase your odds that nothing happens to you out of your own stupidity.
Yeah, and you won't be paralyzed by the fear, which
yeah.
what happens to me when I get really fearful and I believe it, I'm just paralyzed.
Yeah.
To move
yeah.
forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
sad. Absolutely. It is. Because I understand you just did all that dangerous stuff and you were just fine and had a fabulous time.
Yes, I did. Dangerous stuff. Really scary things.
yeah. Only we could then say really exciting stuff.
It was very exciting, and I did not feel afraid at all when I did it.
yeah, yeah, that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah,
I love
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Renee. Sherry, as a parent, I can tell you I'm with you 100% on all of that.
Yeah, gosh, you know, I see kids, they're on tricycles with these giant helmets on their heads, and I think, oh, my God, you know, I mean, I go back to some of the stuff we did when I was a kid, and, you know, it was insane, but, our parents seemed to have the attitude, of course, maybe they didn't want us to come home, I don't know, but they seemed to have the attitude that, well, you know, if you break your arm, you break your arm. It's just all part of, you know, climbing trees or,
yes,
you know, whatever it is, that, you know, yes, riding your bicycle straight down hills or something. You know, it's just, it's part of life.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for another great time, Michael.
Oh, yes, always, yes.
Just yes. All right. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.